ॐ सहना भवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः।
Something actually that just popped up just in the last like 5 seconds. So the way my mind went was earlier when you were talking about the different, like the there was two different types. There's the mumukshu and then the other, where it's the person that comes to this teaching when the mind is having trouble and just needs a little bit of a relief, and then kind of goes back, and then has trouble and then, you know, comes and like.
Oh, if that's not, that's what I was saying today.
Go ahead.
So, I have to clarify that, but go ahead.
Okay, so my mind went there, and then I immediately thought for myself that I'm not, because of course there's my ego. I want to be the most like I want to do it all, and I want to do it all right now.
Yeah.
But then I just, like that, and less than that, was like, no, because I love my family. I don't, it was like, and I thought that the only way that I would become a mumukshu is like when my husband dies and there's so much pain that it's, I have to know beyond a shadow of doubt what there really is. But it's the, but there's that like little moment of somehow in my head, if there's only the self, then nothing else like really matters, or it's not really real. Not important.
What else?
It kind of all, the rest of it just disappears somehow. And I don't want it to disappear.
What disappears?
Well, it's like if somehow I just thought for a second there was if I because then there's just the self.
Yeah. You want me to talk about all that? Okay. You can't. We are here in this creation. We're part of it. You can't make this creation disappear. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not yours to make disappear. This is Ishwar's creation. It's what we call the Jiva Srishti. And your prarabdha karma, it'll take you all the way through. And the prarabdha karma is yours. It is your life. And that has to do also with your parents, your siblings, your husband, the person that you marry, the people, the person you divorce, the main people in your life, your children, your animals, the structure of your life is your life. That is your life. Nobody's going to take that away from you. I mean, that, because that is Ishwara, actually. Mm-hmm. What is the Ishwara Srishti is how you're responding to your life. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that people who have self-knowledge are the best. What Swamiji said, I would be the best husband. I would make the best husband, you know, because I can let my partner be as they are. I can love them as they are, because I don't project all of the love that exists onto them, and so then they have to carry that for me, and then they have to behave in a particular way so that then I can have, I don't know this, but so I could have the Shanti Vritti so I can feel loved. Whereas with knowledge, you don't need to feel You don't need to feel loved from another person because you have that inside of yourself as your very being. And so that means you can really love that person. You can really love your children. You can really love your animals. You can be totally present to them as they are. They don't have to perform for you, and you only love them when they're acting like this. So you only love them when they're just behaving perfectly according to your standards. That all kind of stuff drops off so that you can really be with your family, and you can enjoy your family. You can enjoy all the challenges that your family brings up because you can be present to it. Whereas when you don't have knowledge, that performance factor comes in. I need you to make me happy. And that's what goes away. Now, when we're talking about, when we're doing the Vedanta, we are talking about orders of reality. It's not that this order of reality that we're in, it is real within itself. And then within this order of reality, as an individual, you have all of your thoughts and projections and dreams and imaginations. Those are all subjective. They can come and go. Like if you have a dream or an imagination, you can just pull it in. If you have a thought, you can change that thought. They're subjective. They're called jiva srishti. So that's another order of reality. So we have that order of reality. We have this order of reality that you can't change. It's Ishwaras, and it is taking place. But underneath all of that, there's a unifying principle, you know. And so if you know yourself, your own being, you know the self of your husband. You know who is really there. You know the self of your animals. You know the person that is there because you know this person. Mm-hmm. There's really only one self. And so there's a great deal of trust and intimacy that comes from that, because then the mind, there's a couple of things you know. You know, like for your husband, for instance, you would know that the self that he is the self that he is, and that is the self that you are. And that's not going to change. But then, in terms of the minds, which are always changing, these storm clouds come through, you know, or these bad weather situations come through, and beautiful weather comes through also. It just goes on changing. But no matter how bad the disunity is when that takes place, like I remember my mother said once, "Oh, honey, marriage is full of little baby divorces. It's comprised of little divorces." And then she said, "You know, you make it through these times as long as one of you doesn't want to get divorced. Then you'll stay together. The problem is if both of you want to get divorced at the same time, then you'll get divorced. Fortunately, your dad and I only wanted a divorce only one person at a given time, you know." And so I think what you're doing now is thinking that because the self is really the reality, the underlying reality of every being, that somehow that's scary, or it's negating this reality. Mm-hmm. But it's not negating this reality, it's just making you understand this reality so that your mind has something deeper to rely on, you know, that is benign and beautiful, and so does your husband, and so does your life, and so does the prarabdha karma, and so does Ishwara. There's something underlying everything that is really your own being that allows you to have some trust in this life. Because you have this life. You're going to live through your whole life. There'll be many instances, many things, many challenges, things you like and things you don't like. Those will all be there, but all along, there's something else that is there. Mm-hmm. Even in terms of your relationship, all along there's this, you know, those things where you get along beautifully and you're in love and you're so happy to be together. And then sometimes there's things that happen that bring a lot of insecurity, and you're worried about your relationship and what's going to happen and all of these things. There's something underlying that is stable and benign that you can trust in, you know, and you can trust in it for your partner too. And you can kind of live the life that you've been given with some shraddha. So it's actually, knowledge is not really scary, it's really comforting. Mm-hmm. You know, And to want to gain knowledge doesn't mean that you can or should give up your karma. You know, your husband is included in your karma. He's part of your life. Mm-hmm. You know, and your dogs are too. Mm-hmm. And where you're working and the job that you have and where you find yourself, it's all part of your life. So in terms of vairagya or any of that, that doesn't have to do with getting rid of anything. It has to do with being able to be with what's there. That's vairagya. It has nothing to do with this kind of thing, which is a misunderstanding sometimes when we say the word dispassion. All right, all of you, I don't care about any of you. You know? So that makes me a mamokshu. You mean nothing to me. Keep. That's not what it is at all. It's that I am free to love you completely, and I'm also free to let you be.
Yeah, you know? You just said that I had, you don't matter. Like, it doesn't matter.
It does matter, though.
Yeah.
It does matter, but you don't have to be destroyed mm-hmm. when your husband or your family or life isn't living up to what you think you need to make you happy. Mm-hmm. That part of the what we call the binding desires are what create so many problems in life. And the binding desire is, I need this so that I can be happy. That's a binding desire. That my happiness is dependent on how you are or what you are doing, or my happiness is dependent on whether or not I get this job, or whether or not we have this house, or whether or not I'm allowed to have another dog. Well, whatever it is, these are the binding desires. The non-binding desires is, I would love to have this. I want this. I need this. This would be great. But if I don't get it, I'm fine. Because all of these wants are mithya. I know that my well-being, I know the source of the ananda, you know. And so I don't have this insecurity. No. So the mamukshutvam comes when I recognize that everyone, everything I love, everything I need, everything I want, even my own body, my own mind, there's no exceptions. It's all finite. So you and your husband will be together maybe till you're really, really old, maybe, you know, and maybe you'll die in bed together at the exact same moment. You know, but probably not, you know.
I mean, you do appreciate your partner even more, and you allow them to be what they are. I mean,
yeah.
Many of us have got a partner that's not of a moksha. Many of us have been married for a long time, and there is joy in the partnership, and you do love and appreciate that person even more and more and more.
Yeah, because the more you take your projections off and your needs off, the more you can be with the person that's there. It's a really beautiful thing.
Yeah, so
talk to Jagadisha. I know his wife, Wendy. But, you know, the understanding of vairagya also can get in the way. Mm-hmm. As though, you know, I have to not care about any of these things. And that's not what it is. It's that it's very painful to the degree to which my happiness and my well-being is dependent on how everybody else is. Now, that's very painful. And my well-being or my happiness is how this person is acting and that person is acting, or how my life is unfolding. You know, because I have expectations, actually just projections, imaginations, really. It's Jiva Srishti about how life should go in order for me to be full, complete being. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so those are the issues that make a person a mamukshu. Is there anything about me that survives death? Is there anything about me that's free of dharma and adharma? Is there anything about me that is whole and complete from my own, just my own being? Or am I always at risk? Is my well-being always at risk because of the tricks of the universe? Or that, you know. So I think maybe what set you off is, and maybe in my explanation of There's a verse in the Bhagavad Gita where Krishna is talking about the four types of bhaktas, not the four types of mamukshas, the four types of devotees. Okay, so the first type of devotee is called the arti. That one is a devotee. He recognizes, he has a relationship with Bhagavan. He believes in God and all of this. He's always a Christian, or he's a Muslim, or he's a Hindu, or whatever it is. He believes in God, you know. But God is always there in the background to call upon when something's going wrong and I need him to come and rescue me, to come and save me. That's a type of devotee, because that. But that's when he calls on. There's another type that's called the artarti. For that one, he calls on Bhagawan to bless any beginning. You know, please bless this so that it will be successful. But he's also an arti, because if something goes wrong, you'd also pray to Bhagawan, you know. The third one is the mumukshu. Now, the mumukshu can be an arti. Sometimes, like when things are going wrong, you know, you pray to Bhagawan, you look at the astrology charts, you see what pujas need to be done and everything to try to neutralize that problem. And still, and whenever there's a beginning, even with Swamiji, if there's a new beginning, we always do pujas, we do prayers to invoke Ishwara's grace. So the arti and the tarti, both are there. But then there's the mumukshutvam, where what becomes a need for you, what you really need, is something that is actually resolves the binding desires. You know? Is there anything about me that is okay in and of itself, that I don't have to support, that I don't have to watch what I do or watch what I say, you know, or have this or have that and this, this and that and this, this and that, so that I can be happy? Is there any freedom? The mumukshu is the one who recognizes kind of the finitude of the world. And it's not that you want to reject the world. That's not the right understanding of vairagya. It's you want to be able to be happy with what you have and free when you don't have it. Because you've assimilated your experience and you know that nothing is forever, it just isn't. You know, and then how to live with that? How to live with that when you have your beautiful family and you've, you know, the things that are so precious to you?
Yeah, that's the one thing for me when my grandfather died. That's what gives me peace, is I know that he's
fine.
Yeah, he's here. I am him. He's, you know, we all are. That's something that just, like, thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When Swamiji was even before, when Swamiji was very healthy, but especially when he was, you know, didn't have much longer to live. But even when he was healthy, students would worry, what am I going to do, Swamiji, if something happens to you? And what? I don't know how I can survive. What will I do? You know? And then those questions would come up, especially when he didn't have much longer. Mm. And he says, I am you. I'm always there. I'm always inside of you. I am you. You know? I won't be going anywhere. You know? And that's actually the fact of it. You know? Mm-hmm. So you recognize he's always there inside. You know.
Till I say prayers for your long life and good health.
And Swamiji, he did grieve when his mom passed away too.
He did, because that's Ishwara. Mm. Because he's not trying to cut off all of his feelings and emotions. He grieved when his mother died, which he should. It's his mother, you know. And even the last while, when Swamiji had a drawing done. It's kind of a drawing done by a psychic. I forget what they call it, but the people, he had never really couldn't have any memory of his father, because he lost his father when he was 8 years old, and he really wanted to remember or have some image or some memory of his father. And so they brought in this person who specializes in this, drawing a picture from some sort of the memories of others and just the feeling. There's just some other levels of intuition involved in it. And so, because they had no picture or anything of his father, And so this man drew the picture, and the people who had known his father saw that picture and said, yeah, that's him, that's him. And when Swamiji saw that, his father, that picture of this, so many memories and feelings and even tears and so much, it just came up. So, you know, and he was so happy. He was so happy to have those feelings. He didn't have any feeling like, oh, I shouldn't have these feelings. It's not right to have any feelings. He's not at all. He thought those feelings and those memories that he had not had access to were so precious. He used to talk about that to all of us. And the way he was on when he was more or less bedridden, he would be on his bed, and the bed would be looking out his door into the little, like, small living room where he would meet with people, not the main living room, but that was just attached to his bedroom. And his picture of his father and mother were right there. And the mother also, the painting of the mother looked just like her. I was fortunate enough to have met and talked with his mother. But he would always say, do you see those photos? He would tell everybody, do you see those photos? Look at the photos. And he would always be looking at them and having so many memories and so much feeling. And it's just a beautiful thing. It's not about not having feelings. It's not about not being a human being. And he has all the freedom in the world to be a human, you know. But he doesn't try not to have the feelings. He doesn't try to have the feelings. He's just present to what is. So that freedom of being a human being with it, having this upadhi, was really beautiful. And always inspiring for me that he was a normal person. We are the abnorms. His normalcy was so wonderful. He's just a simple person without all the projections and stuff.
It was also amazing that Swamiji, that you could sort of see him doing all these things and the ahankara just wasn't there.
He was just present to, I just do, I kind of try to live my life to the best as I can with this. He would just say, you just do what is there to be done to the best of your ability, and that's it. I've told that story so many times because I love that story. It's the reality. You do your best to the best of your ability, you know, every day, every moment. And what else can you do? It doesn't mean that you're trying to shut out the future or not remember this. It's that you're just present. You're present to being here, to being here now. And what happens with us when... what's very natural for us, actually, is to not be here now, to be in our imaginal future, or worried about the past. And so, it's interesting, like, what percentage of the day are we actually here, relating to each other and taking care of things and whatever is happening here? So that's very nice for the mind to discover, because your jiva srishti, all of your projections and everything, it's kind of slow down. You slow down into Ishwara's time, into what is actually happening, rather than what you're worried about, the catastrophic thinking we call, in psychology we have a name for it. It's called catastrophic thinking. Yeah. It's like the nosedive of the future. Yeah. And the worries of the past. Yeah.
And usually 95% of the things that we think that, you know, might happen, they just don't even happen.
They don't happen. Because they're imaginal.
Yeah.
They may or may not happen, but often the future is fine when it's the present. You can handle it. We can handle the present. But often when we're imagining the future, we can't handle it. It's catastrophic. What will we do? But if you just handle the present, then the future is... future is the, when the future comes, it is the present. I think that's a really good reflection also, to just kind of look back and realize that you really handle the present pretty well. You know, it's the tumultuous, scary emotions are in the projections into the future, like what's going to happen. You know. But if you're in the present, you're usually doing fine. Well, it's not that things are always hard, easy or whatnot, but you're dealing with it. It's much better than your imagination. Just a psychological aside, children who can have that kind of a rough upbringing, parents who are very angry or punishing or whatever, what they will do, because what they get into what's called anticipatory anxiety. That's the technical name for it. Because their parents lose their temper, or maybe they're alcoholics and you just can't count on their behavior at all, whatever it is. There's a fear of them coming home, or the fear of the next time you're going to have to experience them. And so children will get very, very anxious because they know this is coming and it's probably not going to be good. There's a lot of fear. And so what the child does, what the defense system of a child does to kind of relieve that anticipatory anxiety, is the defense system imagines the situation happening right now. So they have an imagination of the father or mother, whoever is the so-called kind of the abuser, is here now, and that's taking place. And that is a great relief to the anticipatory anxiety, because the anticipatory anxiety, you don't know what's going to happen, but you know it's going to happen. There's a lot of stress for a child. So they imagine it in their mind, they imagine it happening right now. I think that's really, really interesting, because that anticipatory anxiety is what we call catastrophic thinking. When we're imagining into the future, we're living out that future imagination. You know, the child's unconscious defense system will come in and just bring it right now so that I can get it over with, kind of thing. And that's easier. We just get it over with, mm-hmm. rather than have this catastrophic imagination. You know. But for them, that's also an imagination, but it helps relieve the catastrophic future anticipatory anxiety.
I'm dealing with the unknowns.
Yeah. In a frightening way. Uh-huh. Yeah. It's not like you have anticipatory anxiety until you can't wait for mommy or daddy to come home. You're all excited and, you know, like Shweta. But that's not a problem. You're just excited and waiting for mommy and daddy to come home. That's a wonderful thing. But what if you're scared to death for them to come home? Yeah. Then the defense, because you're a child, if you're a child, the defense system has to come in and help you help you be able to accommodate those feelings. And so it will do something. It can also, there's many different types of defenses that are available to children. One is just dissociation. Well, you're having this scare, you're really scared, and your mind just pulls back and goes inside into another land. Mm. And just lives there. Has those experiences. And then comes that back out when it's safe. It's a full dissociation. That's often. That's one of the, you know, defense systems that the psyche has to protect you.
As far as blessings.
Yeah, to take care of things. Bhagavan knows you're just little. You're very little. You have to have different defense systems that will protect you when you can't protect yourself. But the problem then is that these defense systems keep operating past the time, you know, that they were useful. And so then we have to kind of go in and release those defense systems. You know, say, it's almost like an inner child, or I'm an adult now. You've done such a good job. You did such a good job. I'm so grateful to you. But you don't have to do it anymore. Now you can just be with me, you know. Because you have to think also of that defense system is happening in a 3-year-old's mind. So it's a 3-year-old. It's a 3-year-old defense system. Though in some ways the defense system is ageless. But if you tell it, you know, we don't have to do that now. It's fine. are you sure? But it's nice to be able to kind of understand on a psychological level to see the different ways that our psyche protects us. And a lot of them are, they're just almost, what do you call it? You're kind of born with those particular defense systems as being the ones that, for whatever reason, your psyche utilizes. And there's like 18 or 19 of them. And then other psyches depend on other types of defense systems just to protect you in those scary moments that, as a child, you can't handle.
And eventually, as this knowledge and vision is gained, will those, all of those things be seen as mithya?
They will be seen as mithya, and some of the defense systems also are not necessary anymore, and they fall off because you've come into conscious relationship with them. Otherwise, they tend to stay and be operational for you. The least thing that can happen, I think, is that they become mithya, and you can hold them, be with them, converse with, be with them, talk to them, understand them, and they're not, it's not,
love them.
It's not something that really bothers you in your life, even though they're still there. Or even though your personality and what is kind of formed by your family life. It's hard to even imagine. It's an interesting to even try to imagine if you had different parents what you would be like. It's almost impossible to imagine that, because your whole life was formed, and that way you are was really formed by that familial environment, and it's not something that you can really change. That, I mean, the structure of your psyche is very influenced and by the family that you're born in. You can't just become another person, you know. So that's who you are this life. I mean, those parents are part of your prarabdha karma. Yeah, those are your parents. And those are your siblings. And that is your family. And you belong in that family, and there's a lot to learn from it, and the karma is all there. And so we have to have whatever dharmic relationship is that you're supposed to have with your parents and with your siblings, and you have to do your best. Even that dharma toward the parents is not saying you can be adharmic if your parents are screwy. I had these really weird parents. They say, I have these weird parents. I don't want anything to do with them. No, that doesn't work. It doesn't work because they're your parents. And if you write them off, then you have an isolation there because they're your parents. And you can't really write them off. So you're writing them off, trying to write them off, but you can't really do that. It doesn't work. So you just have to do your dharma, whatever that is.
I mean, if you're not writing them off, can you not be with them and not write them off?
Yeah, you cannot be with them and not write them off. And sometimes, you know, like, this is psychology now. Say you have had a really abusive parents or parents that got involved in sexual molestation, this kind of stuff. Say the child or the adult wants to go and kind of try to work it out with that parent who was disturbed in this way. Most psychologists won't advise that, because usually the person who's trying to work that out will come back so disappointed, because the parents often are not at all ready to admit to anything or to really deal with it. And so from a psychological standpoint, if the child, the now child, adult child, really wants to do that, they have to be ready for the parent not to acknowledge any wrongdoing. Not at all. Yeah, and so the thinking that you can go and really work it out with them is a penis is very, very often not true. So you have to be, if you still want to take that gamble, you can take it, but you have to know that also. To not think that you're going to be successful, you might still want to try. But it is disappointing, usually, often. Because the parents can't face what's happened, how they've been or what they've done. Especially when things that really cross the line, you know. Anyway, we've moved into the shadow.
Yeah. What Buddhist Swamiji also was sort of saying, you know, when we were talking about catastrophic thinking, is not to be like an optimist or pessimist, but just to have good attitude. Can you comment on that?
If I'm, let me just read this little note I've got here. Then I feel okay about. Swamiji would be very kind of critical of positive thinking.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Obviously, I've talked about Swamiji about positive thinking.
Yeah, he used to be really critical of positive thinking.
Yes.
Because it's kind of not exactly realistic. It's more realistic to be present to what is happening in a positive way. Where positive thinking is, if I think positively about this or that or this or that, then that will happen. As opposed to if I think negatively about this or that or this or that, that will happen. Either way, maybe there's some. In some ways, there's some truth in it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's some truth that if you see the positive side of things, then that evokes some positive response. Mm-hmm. If you're only seeing the negative side of things, it evokes negative thought. It's kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, from a kind of a Vedantic standpoint, It's more other than positive or negative is seeing everything as Ishwara and taking everything as prasad. And that is positive. The situation is not necessarily positive, but the way you are in the situation, you know, has that Ishwara in it. You know, prasad buddhi. There's these two things in Karma Yoga. Ishwara Arpana Buddhi, where because you recognize all of this as Ishwara, then your actions are really just a puja to Ishwara. Because this is Ishwara, and you have this body, mind, sense organs, and you're acting in this world, so every action that you do is an offering to Ishwara, because this is Ishwara. So that's called Ishwara Arpana Buddhi. And the other side of that is the things that come your way also is Ishwara. And so since it's coming to you, that's a puja. And that's the prasada buddhi. So your actions are an arpana, like a worship of Ishwara, because this is Ishwara. And then what you're receiving back is prasad. And so why the karma yoga buddhi is so helpful is because that is what the natural behavior, in a sense, of a jnani, somebody who has self-knowledge. So there's very little difference between the mind of a karma yogi and the mind of a jnani. The only difference is, I mean, there's a wonderful shanti is there for both. The difference is that for the jnani, that kartritvam is gone. You see, the whole thing is Ishwara, including myself. Or the whole thing is Ishwara. Whereas for the mumukshu, until that knowledge really takes place, the ahankar is there. But the ahankar is very much thinned out. Because even though I'm here as a jiva, I'm still responding to the world as Ishwara and receiving what comes my way as prasad. So that itself, that attitude is, you know, it's very Indian, but nevertheless that attitude gives a lot of shanti in the mind, because it's more about my relationship to Ishwara than the things that are happening. the things that are taking place. It's all much more about my relationship with Ishwara. And so there's a freedom there and a shanti in the buddhi because of that, even though I'm still, in my own mind, the karta, the doer. That's really the whole theme, the major theme in the Bhagavad Gita, is that understanding. Karma Yoga is the main sadhana in the Bhagavad Gita. And the whole understanding of everything Krishna has to say really resolves into that. Karma Yoga Buddhi is that which is necessary for the Antakarana Shuddhi, you know, so that your mind is really available to this knowledge. And to hold available to this knowledge and getting the knowledge, being able to hold it. Because say you're have the mumukshutvam to gain this knowledge, but still there's a lot of raga dveshas there, and so you can't hold the pulla, kind of the fruit of the knowledge of the mind just loving to be with your own being and with the creation as Ishwara. Because the jiva is always popping up its head because of this raga dvesha. So that even with that karma yoga buddhi, that raga dvesha, these likes and dislikes, these binding desires, they drop off in time. It's not that you don't have desires. Just like a jnani, a samsari, you still have desires. The desires are innate to the prarabdha of the karma. But they're not binding desires, they're mithya. So I can enjoy those desires. It gives me something to do.
Yes.
You know, it's what pushes me through my life, you know, those karmas. But what if things don't go my way? I'm fine. But if those desires are there and they're not adharmic, you know, and they're enough to make me act, then there's no, why shouldn't I not do that? Should I wait and wait for something I don't want to do and then do that? That's where all your energy is where that's the unfoldment really of the karma and also the things pulling you toward your next event. That's another type of karma. Either the desires arising from you and propelling you on, or the desires are arising for others and pulling you into that. Or it's just the vagaries of the creation that you find yourself in. Situations that arise around you that then create a situation that you have to experience and be in and act in. So the prarabdha is certainly not desire-free for a jnani or an ajnani. It's just it's not binding. Because my anand, and not binding means not that I don't want to do it, it's just that my ananda is not dependent on it. My fullness is not dependent on it. Binding desires, I have to have it that way or I won't be happy. That, you know? So with that one, that means that you can love your relationship and love your partner and love your family and really enjoy them and not need them to be a certain way, and when one family member dies, you'll cry and grieve and really miss them. And you'll also be happy that you're crying and grieving because they deserve that grief. Mm-hmm. When my brother died, when George died, about 20 years ago, I guess, I really cried for him, and we had a beautiful funeral for him, and all of his friends came, and so many people came, and Swamiji wrote a beautiful letter that we read to everybody, because George is very close to Swamiji. And that, so many people grieved for him, and my family grieved for him. I just felt, and I grieved for him, and I just felt he was such a beautiful person. He deserved all of that grief and all the people missing him. That's who he was. People should miss him. They should grieve for him. And I was glad we were all grieving for him. It was a way of honoring him, you know. So I think that grief is also Ishwara. Mm-hmm. Then the jiva srishti can come in and build up on the why me? Why did he have to die? And you know, make your own jiva srishti, mess out of the whole thing. Mm-hmm. you know, But if it's just the act of it and the natural grief and tears are there, it's an honor to the one who's passed away. Mm. It's very special. In Swamiji's letter about George, he said, this is so moving because it was so true. He said he never had an agenda for anybody. He never had an agenda. He never needed you to be in a particular way. You were just always fine as you were. And that was true. That was Swamiji kind of nailed it. That was a really beautiful quality at George's. It just didn't occur to him. He was happy to just be with you as you were. He had no agenda at all. He just liked to be with you. He was our favorite in the family. And because he liked you the way you were. No agenda. And so Amaji picked up on that, and his letter was only like three or four sentences. But that was the key. It was so beautiful. To see, that he was that way.
Om Swasti Prajabhya Paripalayantam Nyayena Margena Mahimahishaha Go Brahmanevya Shivamastu Nityam Loka samastha sukhino bhavantu kale varshatu parjanyah prithivi sasya shalini desho yam shobharahitah brahmana santu nirbhayah om sarve bhavantu sukhinah sarve santu niramayah Sarve bhadrani pashyantu ma kaschit dukha bhag bhavet asato ma sagamaya tamaso ma jyotir gamaya mrityor ma amritangamaya om purnamadah purnamidam purnat purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavasishyate Om Shanti 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 Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om